ॐ सहनाववतु, सहनौ भुनक्तु, सहवीर्यं करवावहै, तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। A human being is like a river. You can call a river only when there is water as well as strong banks, isn't it? Then the water nicely gets channelized. It can be used for irrigation, production of electricity, etc. Supposing there is no water in the river, then just by saying it's river, it's no use. Secondly, there is a lot of water, but there are no proper banks. Then what will happen? The water will go and inundate the agricultural field. It will be a lot of wastage and it won't be useful for the humanity, the whole world. Similarly, a human being should have both emotions and reasoning capacity. You know, when we were born as a child, only the physical brain is developing a little bit for a few years, approximately around 5 years back, only physical brain is growing. Then slowly, slowly, the emotional aspect starts developing. Then around 10 or 12 onwards, you start reasoning, thinking, questioning, analyzing. That's the time you need to encourage the children, the teenagers, to develop the ability to think independent of whatever may be the input. No. We should develop that original thinking. So there has to be emotions, there has to be the ability to reason. And our reasoning should be like the banks of the river, and emotions are like the water in the river. If you are without water, useless. If the river is without water, useless. If there is water and no banks, useless. Similarly, if there are no emotions, only reasoning, problem. No reasoning whatsoever, only emotions. Again, problem. You should have emotions and reasoning ability to guide, channelize your emotions. You know? So when your emotions are underlined by independent reasoning, it becomes strong. If not, it remains weak. So this whole chapter, Strength of Emotion, is all about strengthening the emotions, converting it from being weak. Right now, our emotions are weak. For example, we'll have weak pity rather than compassion. We will have attachment rather than love. So how to convert the frail form of emotions into a pillar of strength? That's what this chapter talks about. So first and foremost, when we develop our intellect, it remains as a support for the emotions. Then we remain a strong personality. Then we'll have love, not attachment. Then we'll have compassion, not weak pity. And not only that, you may have certain emotions like kindness, but the emotions should be in your hands. You should not be in the hands of the emotions. Like for example, when we discuss the kindness emotion, he will explain. The very nature of being kind became weakness in many people. That was used as an advantage by the opposition, and many battles were won. So how to make your emotions be under your control? So you should be able to use them. They should be your resource. You should not be bereft of it. But at the same time, you cannot come under the control of the emotions. That's what he's talking about. So the first topic, emotion and intellection, no? He talks about this only. There he gives a few lines from the poem, Village Preacher. Village Preacher is compared to a man of perfection. And he lived with minimum, but inside he had reached the perfection. He's enlightened soul. And he, when he talks about him, he says, to them his heart, his griefs were given. His heart, his love, his griefs were given. But all his serious thoughts had rested in him. As some tall cliff that lifts its awful form and midway leaves the storm. Swells from where and midway leaves the storm. Though round its breast, the rolling clouds are spread, eternal sunshine settles on its head. What he is trying to say is, he's talking about the mountain and its peak. It is swelled from the valley, you know. And there are clouds settling only at the breast level of the mountain. Neither, you know, affecting the head. So he says, the head is always exposed to the sun above. So round its breast the rolling clouds are spread, eternal sunshine settles on its head. So, like that, a human being should have emotions, but keep the emotions under his or her control. Only then we are human beings. If there's no emotion, no human being. There are emotions, but we are overpowered by emotions, again no human being. Have emotions, but keep them under control, then you are a human being. Having said all that, now he is explaining some emotions, you know, some facets of emotions. So he takes up some important emotions like love, and he compares it and contrasts it with attachment and explains. Then he talks about weak pity. This is very common. Most of us have this. Kindness, weak pity, and then we become emotional and do a lot of charity. So he takes up that and then he discusses that as well. And then only he gets on to the next topic, which is effects of manifestation. So the first emotion that he discusses is love. So let's read love. Who wants to read?
Avanti, why don't you?
I can.
Oh, read.
Should I try?
Yes, who is that? Rita ji.
Rita. I'm not that good, but I'll try.
No. Don't worry about good.
Yes, everybody reads, it'll be good.
So I start from the concept of love?
Yes, that topic, yes.
Yeah. The concept of love has been...
Where are you?
So love is being in harmony. From the beginning. Okay. I thought after the first paragraph.
No.
Love is being in harmony with one and all. Love means realizing your identity with the world. Your oneness with beings. To regard them as you would the different parts of your physical body. Every part of the body is dear to you. You look at it, look after it as your whole being. Be it your fingers or toes, your eyes or ears. So must you feel and realize the unity with your fellow beings. Your oneness with the entire universe. That is love. A feeling that helps you maintain a perfect harmony with the world. You then live in peace and bliss. And if you lack the feeling of oneness, consider yourself separate and distinct from the rest. You would fall out of harmony with the world. You deprive yourself of this great emotion of love and live a life of suffering and sorrow. That is the law.
Yeah. So, in this first paragraph, first and foremost, what is love he talks about? Love is nothing but identification, a feeling of oneness. The greater the love, the greater the identification, or the deeper the identification. To what extent can you identify, that extent you have love. You know, so he says, Love is being in harmony with one and all. When you go to that highest form of love, you identify with every being, each and every being. If you look at it emotionally, you can say we are all children of God. Doesn't matter whether good, bad, ugly. All are children of God, so I love everyone equally. If you look at it intellectually, everyone is nothing but an expression of the divinity, pure consciousness, Atma. The gunas may vary, but everyone is essentially Atma. Therefore, I love everyone because I am one with them. So that, therefore, love is nothing but what? Feeling of oneness. Identification. That is called love. So he says, love means realizing your identity with the world. Now, to what extent a human being has grown can be understood from this. From what extent, to what extent we identify. Many of us identify only with ourselves. And few more identify with family maximum. Some with countrymen, some with all other human beings, but with reference to animals, no. All these explains. So you know the range is there. As we evolve spiritually, we should be growing in love. That should be a natural outcome. Because people ask, how do we know you are evolving or not? One of the factors based on which you will understand whether you evolved or not is how much of love you have. Is the love in you expanding or not? That is what you need to see. So he says to regard them as you would regard the different parts of your physical muscle. By mistake, if your finger pokes your eyes, you know, you're removing your glass, that time you by mistake, your fingers poke your eyes, will you get angry with your fingers? You won't. Why? Because you know, there is also me, I is also me. So there's no question of getting angry with your fingers. Every part of your body, you understand as you. That's called love. Similarly, when you understand each and every aspect of this universe and every being as yourself, then you will have universal love. So what he said, so must you feel and realize unity with your fellow beings. Your oneness with the entire universe. That is called love. So when we read this definition, we'll clearly see that I don't have love. Each one will say, I don't think I have love. I have very limited love. That's why, you know, Aliva Goldsmith says, love is still an emptiest sound on earth unknown. But it's modern fair ones just keep on talking. It's a gesture, I love you, I love you. But hardly anybody truly have love. So, he says, this is love. Your oneness should be realized with the entire universe. Then you have love. So the first point is, love is identification with one and all. So therefore, it is universal. And with one and all, immaterial of any condition. I have love with reference to all my class members who are attending today. Who are not attending, I hate them. It's a condition. If you have such conditions, then your love is very restricted. It's not true love. You understand? Love is universal. Love is unconditional. There should be no conditions. So that's what he's saying. A feeling that helps you to maintain perfect harmony with the world. Now the beauty is, if you have such a feeling, or to the extent you have such a feeling, to that extent, you will find harmony within you and with your fellow beings. It's not that the world has become perfect. World with all its imperfections, you are still able to find harmony with the world. And that is because of your feeling, but nothing to do with what the world is. So that's what he's saying. You will then feel peace and bliss. If you lack the feeling of oneness, consider yourself separate and distinct from the rest, you would fall out of harmony with the world. You won't have harmony with the world. You will be constantly agitated with it, and you will agitate people also. In fact, one of the qualities of a bhakta, in the Bhagavad Gita, when he talks about in the 12th chapter, he says, a bhakta is one who doesn't get agitated by the world, nor does he agitate the world. In our case, we agitate the world. We don't have to say anything. Just say that I am also coming to the meeting. Everybody gets agitated. But that fellow is coming. And he got gone. You know, meaning the very presence of that person puts off the other. Because it's constantly demanding mera, my views, you know, my opinion matters, you are wrong, I, you, constant separation. Everybody gets fed up. So that's what he said. You deprive yourself of this great emotion of love and live a life of suffering and sorrow, that is the way. So, in other words, what he's trying to say is, if you develop this feeling, how will you develop this feeling? If you see the superficial layers, you won't develop. But superficially, there are so many differences. Isn't it? From the skin level itself, if you start, there are a lot of differences. So, superficially, there are too many differences. Color, caste, community, sex, and then religion, and then gunas, you know, different gunas each one has. So when you look at it superficially, you won't develop love. But you penetrate through the superficial layers and then you see the reality, the truth, then there will be love. Then there will be love. That, when you start developing, you cannot have suffering or sorrow. So if you are suffering and you are going through sorrow, means you have no love. See, when he says suffering and sorrow, he is not trying to say that you should not have that sad feeling. You know, he is just saying that it should not affect you. Yes, please, continue, Rita ji.
The concept of love has been totally distorted. What people call as love is far from true love. What the world understands as love is personal, referential attachment. Attachment binds you, makes you dependent upon the object or being of your attachment, leads to your downfall. Little wonder people say you have fallen in love. You must give up this clinging, selfish, personal attachment which passes off as love and develop the true form of love. A perfect human being is all love. You observe it in the child. A child is an embodiment of love. It has no motive, no desire, no personal attachment. It is not being a lover, but is love itself. Everyone is drawn towards it. The whole world adores the child. You must learn to follow the example of the child. Give up your selfishness. Get rid of preferential relationships. Dissolve personal attachment. Rise above egocentric motive and desire. You thus merge with the fundamental element of love. You become the center of attraction in the world, a magnetic personality, a true human being. Therefore, goodness flows out of you to the rest of the world. Thereafter, goodness flows out of you to the rest of the world. Those who mean to serve the world would do well to develop such purity of love.
So before you really start any NGO, first develop identification, love, and then start NGOs. That's what he's saying in the end. You know, very easy to start an NGO, but Are you doing that to really serve or serve yourself? You know? So therefore, he's saying those who mean to serve the world would do well to develop such purity of love. This is the problem. The accent is more on myself rather than the receiver. How can that be love? How can that be true service? So first and foremost, we need to understand this concept of love, which unfortunately is misunderstood in this world, and only attachment is considered as love in this world. We discussed love means universal, unconditional. It is not preferential. Whereas attachment is preferential. That's what he's explaining here. The concept of love has been totally distorted. What people call as love is far from love. What the world understands as love is personal and preferential attachment. Certain people who cater to me, either directly or indirectly, tangibly or intangibly, I say I love you. In fact, you are not loving them. There is constant pressure on that person to continue catering to you. The moment catering stops, you will say, I hate you. So you are actually loving yourself only, not that person. If you are not following these conditions, you are out. You know, then you are out. That's what he's saying. So, when you are in a relationship out of love, it binds you. Whereas when you are in a relationship out of love, you will be free. Whereas if it is out of attachment, you will be bound. There's constant tension to keep pleasing each other. What will the other fellow think you were from doing like this? Will he think like this? Will she think like this? That means you are in attachment. In love, there is perfect freedom. There is acceptance. You love a person for what he or she is. You understand? If that person changes oneself to fit into your definition of, you know, perfect or good, then you love that person, then that is not love. So that's what he says. Love should not make you dependent. If it makes you dependent, it is attachment. So he says people say, I have fallen in love. Fallen in love means what? A fellow becomes like a zombie, you know. Till he, suppose he is fallen in love and the girl is not interested in him. That's it. He can't do anything. He won't live properly. He will agitate everybody else also. And what kind of a life is that? Is that love? Which restricts you from functioning normally. What kind of emotion is that? So he says, instead of falling in love, why don't you rise? In love, there is identification with the other person. No? So when there is identification with the other person, you know that the other person equally has freedom like you do. So you may love that person for whatever reasons. That person says, listen, I will love you, but we cannot be in a relationship. Or they may say, I don't love you also. So why should your love be affected by their view? If it is, then it is not true love. That's all he's saying. We are now discussing about true love. So you must give up the clinging, selfish, personal attachment which fathers are as love. Please understand this. Love plus selfishness equals attachment. Attachment minus selfishness equals love. All you need to do is remove that selfishness. In the case of a child, very innocent the child is. You know, child has no demands, no desires, no motives. There's no condition to love you or not love you. So everybody gets attracted. Whereas a grown-up human being whose ego is so high, there is constant desire, preference. Everybody has to cater. Otherwise, you know, they don't love. So you're in constant tension. There is motive. There is rise above egoistic motive and desire. Make it pure love. Then you become the center of attraction of the world. In love, you don't judge anybody. In love, you don't possess anybody. In love, you accept everyone. We are talking about at the mental level. You accept everyone for what they are. With all their good, bad and ugly traits. You love that person. And that is only possible if you are able to see through the good, bad and ugly and see the truth within. Otherwise not possible. You understand? When you see a rock, you only see the rock. But when a sculptor sees a rock, he sees a beautiful Ganesha in it. That's a completely different vision, isn't it? We see the rock, nothing you see there. He sees the rock, he sees a beautiful Ganesha, beautiful Lakshmi Devi, Saraswati Devi. He can beautifully chisel out the idol. So, therefore he said, if you start identifying with that person, then like that, if you start identifying with larger circle, you become the center of attraction. You got to lose the ego. That's all it is. When you lose the ego, everybody gets attracted. You don't lose the ego, you keep the ego, people get completely away from you. It is thereafter goodness flows out of you to the rest of the world. In other words, then only you can really serve. Because you started seeing them as your own personality, your own being. So you will take care of them just like you take care of yourself. Isn't it? Otherwise, no. So how can you start an NGO? He didn't use the word NGO, but that's what he means. And he's saying, those who mean to serve the world would do well to develop such purity of love. Without identification, when you do, it is just to cater to your selfish needs. But when you have love, you don't have to actually start NGO. So whatever you do will be in identification with the entire universe. See, for example, even when you have to take a flight, you will think, is it really necessary? Then you will take. Otherwise, why do that? Even though I can afford, that is not the point. But unnecessarily we'll be polluting, so much of energy wasted. You are identifying with the world. See, today we are talking about, you know, so much this thing that segregate your waste, this, that. It will all naturally happen as you start identifying with larger self. You will start doing actions which is in the best interest of the other. For example, if you are traveling in a bus or metro, there are so many other people traveling. Supposing you are so egoistic, you are not even concerned about the fellow travelers, you will switch on your mobile phone and listen to the song loudly. Otherwise, what will you do? You will use the earphones and you will quietly listen without disturbing anybody else. Other people, they have their life. So, you understand. This concern, this is called love, manifesting in different ways. So, the real service starts when there is love. Otherwise, it doesn't. That's why he says, those who mean to serve the world would do well to develop such purity of love. So therefore, first start understanding about the human being, about the world, and then start identifying with the consciousness, the permanent aspects, develop more love, and then naturally, whatever work comes out of you will be service. Thereafter, you cannot do work, you will only do service. When you are paid by your organization, you are paid for your time, not for your work. This is how you will work. Because who can pay for the service you render? In service, there is God, because there is no ego. Please understand the difference. In Christianity, going to church on Sundays, they call it as Sunday service. So what is service? Service is work minus ego. When you do work minus ego, means what? There is no I, there is only God there. So who can pay to such a service? Who is there in this universe so rich to compensate for such service? You know? See, this is something that all of us need to understand. We try to emphasize this to the corporate world, the management, and we discuss to the employees as well as the employer. The employers should not think that they are workers working for me. You can't really pay for the service rendered by them. You are paying for the time, that's all. You are not so rich to pay for the service. Nobody is rich in this universe to pay for the service of anybody. Similarly, you also understand that you are not working for somebody. When you really understand Vedanta, you will only be doing service, you won't be doing work. And that's what Swamiji means when he says, for the last 50, 60 years I've been unemployed, but busy. Unemployed means what? Who is there in this universe so rich to employ me? Not egoistic statement. Please understand from which angle we are discussing. It's a very interesting concept. So when a person has love, that person never does work. A person does only service. That's all he's saying. True service, okay, for worldly reasons you need to register it or whatever, call it NGO, you'll do all that. But otherwise everything will be service. Continue, please.
Love and attachment are opposed to each other. Attachment is perversion of love. Attachment to an object or being generates an aversion to other objects and beings. When you are preferentially fond of anybody, you distance yourself from the rest. That is a fact of life. A child has no such form, no such attachment. Its love is all embracing. But when the child grows up into a young man, he falls in love. Now being attached to his lady love, he develops a preferential relationship with her. To that extent, he turns indifferent towards others. Parents, brothers, sisters, and the rest become a burden on him. He segregates himself from them. True love is lost. All that he desires, craves for is his beloved. Everyone else, everything else means nothing to him. He finds them all insipid, detestable and detestable. People call that love. In truth, it engenders hatred. So when Vedanta cries out to give up love, it means give up hatred. Inclusive love and not exclusive attachment is the unfoldment of heaven.
Heaven means happiness. Inclusive love and not exclusive love is the unfoldment of heaven. Meaning when you start developing the true love, you will be in heaven. You don't have to go anywhere to find if there is heaven there, any other place, you know. Right now, you can enjoy heaven, provided you are ready to lose your ego. That's what he said. So, the opposite of love is attachment. In the sense, love is zero selfishness. Attachment is only selfishness. Completely opposite. So in attachment, there is actually hatred towards the other group. You know, supposing you function identifying only with your community. To that community, you are big sacrificial guy. But to the others, you poor you. Ready to kill them also. In fact, when you analyze, you are actually dangerous to your own community. Because you are only creating hatred for the community across the world. So that's what he is saying here. In this whole paragraph, he is saying this much only. The moment you start loving someone, it becomes so exclusive that you start separating everybody else. Start creating problem. How is that possible? You have been in love with so many people till now, suddenly another person has come, now you hate all these people. What has happened? You have that, you know, interest, selfishness. As long as that continues and that other person is escaping, you don't want to lose it. So you are ready to create problem with others also to get this relationship going. But even in this relationship, when the mind changes, happens, isn't it? So many families. The mind changes only after 20 years. You throw this verse in us. So really speaking, you are only in love with yourself. You don't love anybody. So that's what he's saying. Attachment is more and more exclusive. Whereas love is more and more inclusive. It includes everyone. You will go with what is right, not what is pleasing. In attachment, you will go with what is pleasing. That's why there is burden. That's why there is bondage. There is dependence. There is struggle. There is pain. As in love, you go with what is right, not what is pleasing. So there is no problem. There is no bondage. There is no dependence. There is no tension. Continue, please.
When you are attached to any object or being, you suffer from the sorrows thereof. Parents attached to their children are ever agitated. They are troubled with worry and anxiety through their lifetime. If you are attached to the new carpet in your home, you feel miserable when someone walks in with wet feet. When you are attached to your car, a dent in its body is a dent in your body is a pain in your heart. You must therefore transform this unilateral passion into universal adoration. Develop a unison with the world, which is unison with God. A true spiritual master has attained that Catholicity. He lives like anyone else in his home or society, but his mind is not confined to his individual unit. He meticulously carries out his obligatory duty and responsibility, yet his mind remains ever unattached, pure and loving. Follow the footprints of such great souls. Give up your petty attachments. Harbor pure love. You then become a source of peace and bliss to humanity.
So, in this, all he's saying is, the reason for your suffering is your selfishness. If you really want to get out of your suffering, you need to get out of your selfishness. Trying to solve the problem outside is not going to help. You just need to move out of your selfishness that you have created yourself. So he gives the example. When a parent is attached to the child, the parent is constantly agitated. Children also get fed up. It's like, you know, you may love your son so much, but he is, let's say, 15 kilos and he is constantly sitting on your back. Your son or grandchild, 15 kilos, constantly sitting on the back. How long can you carry? Yeah, get down here. Enough is enough. You know, you also want him to get down. Same thing happens in the relationship which is out of attachment. So what he says, constant agitation is there. Worry, anxiety throughout the lifestyle. I give another example of an object. When you get attached, you don't enjoy it, you don't allow anybody else to enjoy it also. Use the example of a carpet, new carpet. You don't enjoy it. Why? Because you're focusing on who's coming with dirty feet, what is happening, instead of enjoying. Nor will you allow anybody else to enjoy. When there is attachment, your enjoyment is gone. So, Isa Vasya Upanishad, that's why it says, Isa Vasyam Idam Sarvam Yatkinchak Jagatyam Jagat Tena Tyaktena Bunjita Magata Kasya Siddha. May you enjoy through renunciation. Renunciation of what? Renunciation of the possessiveness. Renunciation of the egoistic attitude. The possessiveness you should drop, then only you will enjoy. You know, I see on the road sometimes, a new car is bought, may not be new, in the sense, 1 month ho gaya. But still the ribbon people have not cut. Now when they get the car from the showroom, they give it to the ribbon, they don't cut it. And in some of the cars I see, the polythene cover is there on the seats also. They have not removed it. For months together they drive like that. All these are what? Nothing but attachment. Such people only get tremendously affected even if there is a small scratch in the car. That doesn't mean you drive so stupidly and make scratches everywhere. But you must understand, if you buy a car and drive in Delhi, it's just a question of time before some scratch happens. However careful you are. Otherwise you will not buy only. So they don't enjoy. That's what he's trying to say. Anything happens to the car, happens to you. There's a dent in the car, a big dent in your heart. But when the car belongs to the company, you enjoy very much. Oh my God, what a beautiful shock absorber they have, you know. Fantastic. This German technology is outstanding. You will say that. But when the same German car you bought, same shock absorber, same pothole, everything same. But now you are having heart attack. Why? Because mera. That's the thing. Therefore he says, just drop that mera. Move from the unilateral passion to universal adoration. Start identifying with the common rather than the superficial differences. You don't need education to see the differences. Yeah? You need education to see the oneness, isn't it? Differences is obvious. Okay, maybe some subtle differences are not so obvious. That also a little bit, if you are intelligent, you will see. But it's not enough just to be intelligent to see the oneness. So, he therefore says, a true spiritual master has attained the catholicity, means universality. This is what he's discussing is nothing but unity in diversity. He says, he lives like anyone else in his home or society, but his mind is not confined to his individual unit. See, in other words, just because you develop love doesn't mean now you have to leave your home and go somewhere. To continue, you have an obligation towards your parents, your children. But why should the feeling of oneness be restricted to them alone? There's no need to be restricting your feeling. That's all he's saying. He meticulously carries out his obligatory duty and responsibility. Yet his mind ever remains unattached, pure and loving. So there's a difference. So people will ask, hey, so what? If I have universal love, so that means what? I should be earning salary for every family? Not like that. That is not what we are saying. Of course you have an obligation towards your immediate family. But why should the emotion, feeling be restricted to just your family? That's the question. Give up your petty attachments, harbor pure love, you then become a source of peace and bliss to humanity. Firstly, you will become source of peace to yourself. Only then can you be peaceful, source of peace to others. And you yourself are agitated. What kind of peace can you give to others? Impossible. Continue, please.
The experience of love, the expression of this feeling, seems to emerge initially from your partner, your child. You perhaps did not experience it as clearly until you raised a family. Having generated this noble feeling of love, do not restrict it. Confine it to the family unit. Let the rays of your affection radiate all over. Your fondness permeate every being. Your love pervade the flora and fauna, hills and valleys, and fill up the entire universe. Your home, therefore, should be the center and not the boundary of your affection.
This is a beautiful statement by Swami Ramtita. Your home should be the center and not the boundary of your affection. Why should your home be the boundary of your affection? Can be the center, no problem. Rather, it should be. Because you have immediate obligation there. Like, as a citizen of this country, you have an obligation towards this country. But why should it be that you restrict your love only to this countryman? To other people, you do whatever you want. Why should it be like that? That's all he's asking. So perhaps this emotion, when you were a bachelor, you didn't have it that much. So slowly, slowly, when you get married and you produce children and, bring out the family, you start identifying with little larger circle. A lot more sacrifices you do. And suddenly you find that there is a lot more energy in you, a lot more patience, sacrifice, joy. So this should make you understand that if I can increase the boundary further and further and further, broader and broader, then I will experience the same thing more and more. And finally it should go to where there is no boundary. That's all he's saying. That's why a person, when we talk about love and all that, how to develop it now? So straight away can you go to universal love? So firstly you say, okay, you start identifying with your family and function. Then don't get stuck there. From the family level, raise yourself to your community maybe. Once you are established there, don't get stuck there. From your community, rise to your country. Then from the country, you rise to fellow beings, human beings. Then from there, you rise to all species. Why should it be restricted only to human beings? But before coming to all species, before that you have to come to all human beings. Before all human beings, to your countrymen. Like that, when you work downwards, starts from you to the universe. So in between, wherever you are, accordingly you set your goal and start functioning. Then it will be practical. Otherwise you will say, I will either be selfish or I will have only universal love. That is not possible. You must expand in love. That's all he's trying to say. Love should pervade the flora and fauna, hills and valleys, and fill up the entire universe. Your home should be the center, not the boundary of your affection. Next emotion is kindness. Please continue.
Kindness is a feeling of tenderness, gentleness, a compassionate, benevolent attitude of the mind, a noble emotion that renders the human species supreme, a fine trait that gives humans a spiritual edge. Kindness is like fragrance in a rose, an essential feature of religion. Religious practice without kindness of heart is a mockery. And yet, the much talked of religious stalwarts seem to ignore, much less possess, the essence of spirituality. Without kindness, there can be no spiritual evolution. Ella Wheeler Wilcox presents this idea succinctly. So many gods, so many creeds, so many paths that wind and wind, while just the art of being kind is all the sad world needs.
So what he's saying, kindness is just a feeling of tenderness, softness, gentleness, a compassionate, benevolent attitude of the mind. It is nothing but a benevolent attitude of the mind. See, a lot of us get confused with act of kindness to the actual kindness. So it is a noble emotion that renders the human species supreme. See, when an animal is hungry, the animal only looks upon another species as its prey, as food. There's no question of showing kindness at all. You know, I have to kill you and eat. Whereas a human being alone has this ability to say, okay, I may have to go through this hunger, but why? To satisfy my hunger, harm somebody else. You know? This ability to reason and control that emotion is only there in the human being. That's why the human being can be supreme. That's all he says. A noble emotion that renders the human species supreme. So, there is no question of a tiger saying, okay, chalo, you've been crying so much, so I won't kill you. That you won't see in a tiger. But you can see that in a human being. Whether you see it in all human beings or not, but it's possible. A fine trait that gives humans the spiritual edge. Why for my pleasure I should harm somebody? So you will not. That's all you think. This is the essential feature of religion. It's like how the fragrance and rose cannot be separated. If you are truly spiritual and religious, you should have these kinds. Otherwise you are not. So he says, religious practice without kindness of heart is a mockery. It's just tamasha going on. Without kindness, there can be no spiritual evolution. Because in front of you, there is a person suffering. You can't have kindness towards that person, compassionate towards that person. How can you see the truth which is far deep? The grass itself you cannot see. How will you see the subtle? That's why he says, and he quotes this Ella Wheeler Wilcox. There's so many gods. My God versus your God. Everybody keeps on fighting. My God is superior. Your God is superior. Your God is no God at all. You know. He says so many creeds, so many gods. So many paths that wind and wind. Within, you know, in every religion, there are how many groups? In Hinduism, Shaivite, Vaishnavite, all kinds of groups are there. You go to Christianity, there are too many groups. In Islam, there are too many groups. That's what he's saying. So many paths that wind and wind. But just the art of being kind is all the sad world needs. We all identify with our religion and fight with each other. Kindness has been thrown out of the window. But we call ourselves spiritual. Continue, please. Ritaji, please read.
The concept of kindness has been gravely misconstructed in India. They blunder in following the spiritual doctrine of ahimsa, non-injury, and refuse to inflict any form of injury. They are more concerned about the act of kindness rather than thought of kindness. Shakespeare points out this human weakness in his play Hamlet when he advises that one needs to be sometimes cruel only to be kind. The Hindus have followed the doctrines of ahimsa blindly. They have abstained from injuring anybody irrespective of the consequence accruing therefrom, even if that led to their own destruction later. This fanatic approach to life has rendered the Hindu race passive and vulnerable. A weakness that turned out to be a diabolic weapon in the hands of the oppressors and invaders, which was made use of to destroy the Indian tradition, culture and religion.
Now please continue.
The epic Mahabharata highlights this grave error and offers corrective measures, wherein the great hero Arjun was overwhelmed by a flood of emotion. He refused to endure and destroy his kith and kin arrayed in the opposing forces. He would not fight and sought Krishna's advice. Krishna recharged Arjun with a higher vision to fight for a noble cause, to revive righteousness in the state, for which the war, injury and destruction was inevitable. Arjun corrected his vision. He rose, fought and brought about enduring peace and happiness to the people.
So he says, first of all, people confuse themselves between the act of kindness and the actual attitude of kindness. It is to do with the mind, nothing to do with the action. When it comes to action, you need to think and then do the action. So if you don't, then that act itself, that very emotion becomes a weakness in you. That's all he's explaining. Ahimsa. Ahimsa is, of course, nothing but non-injury. What it means is you have no ill feeling towards any being. But that doesn't mean you don't have the capacity to set things right when it goes wrong. That doesn't mean that you don't have a backbone. Please understand the difference. And Mike Tyson confronts me. And then I say, I am practicing ahimsa. What ahimsa I am practicing? If he just, he blows, I'll be finished. Doesn't have to fight with me. But then I say, I am practicing ahimsa. What kind of ahimsa is this? So ahimsa means what? Non-injury at the mental level. You have no ill feeling towards any being. You do not have any capacity to hurt any being mentally. But physically, when there is dharma at stake, you have to fight against it, you will do it. Even if it means physically you have to hurt. That's called ahimsa. It's called kindness. Otherwise it's not kindness. Otherwise, then it's called weakness. That's all he says. But then he quotes Mahabharata. In Mahabharata, Arjuna is saying, we will be killing all these people, then we'll go to hell. He's more concerned about that. What kind of people are these fellows? Do they deserve this kind of ahimsa? Inside you have the feeling, yes. But what to do? They're so stupid. They are only going to come and do more and more atrocity. So you've got to set it right. Like when a child is suffering from some serious illness, and the doctor says, we have to give him this injection. And the child is saying, I do not want injection. I do not want injection. And you're saying, you're very kind. That's why Shakespeare says, sometimes you have to be cruel only to be kind. Sometimes. In such situation, the mother will have to say, nothing doing. You have to take the injection. Not showing act of kindness. In fact, you have true kindness to the child. For the good of the child, you have to do this. So for the good of these people, for the good of the world, you need to take such stringent actions. That is called true kindness. See, always when there is a conflict of dharma between the lower and the higher, you always choose the higher. So Ahimsa also will have to always be identified with the higher, not with the lower. Then it is not true Ahimsa. So we'll conclude here. We'll meet again next week. Let's conclude. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyerva Budhyatmanava Prakrute Svabhava Karomi Yadhyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayana Yeti Samarpayami. Obrigado.